I'm Nick Harvey Doyle, an Anawan man from the northern tablelands of New South Wales. The Yarn podcast is made on the unceded land of the Wurundjeri, Woiwurrung, and Bunurong people. We'd like to acknowledge First Nations people as the first storytellers. We pay our respects to elders past and present. Always was, always will be, Aboriginal land.
From the Centre for Advancing Journalism at the University of Melbourne, this is The Yarn. I'm Thomas Phillips. The number 19 tram line is Melbourne's backbone, taking passengers all the way from Coburg North to Flinders Street Station. Our new series, Tram Tales, shares the stories and struggles of people who live, work and travel along this central artery. For our first episode, we're focusing on an issue that's top of mind for most Australians, the cost of living crisis. Energy, housing, and food costs have skyrocketed. The price of bread is up 24% since 2021, and many are barely getting by. A recent New York Times article even said happy-go-lucky Australia is feeling neither happy nor lucky. So we're investigating how people along Route 19 are coping. First up, a story from stop number 10, the University of Melbourne. Every day, a long queue forms outside Union Mart, a place where students in need can get groceries for free. In recent weeks, those lines are even longer, a sign that more students are in trouble. But these queues are also the result of controversial changes to the system. Student welfare officer Joshua Stagg told reporter Yibo Meng why he thinks these reforms are necessary.
Firstly, the reason we want to change things was last year when I was campaigning for this role, a lot of students told me that either they didn't know what Union Mart was or they'd had a really bad experience because it used to be online. You used to have to register about a week in advance, if not a fortnight. And if you didn't get in, you'd go to the website and they'd just say, sorry, we're full. And if you went there in person, they'd turn you away at the door. And I found that very frustrating because for a student who's already struggling, it's quite alienating to come to the door and you can see food in there and you're really hungry. And they're like, no, you didn't register.
So is the change of system based on students' feedback?
Yes, very much so. And there's two parts to this. One, students really hated online registration. They really didn't like having to do it in advance because the person who is proactive enough to book in advance is probably not also the person that needs it the most. Whereas right now, even though I appreciate that not everyone likes queuing, me included. In fact, if you do like queuing, then that's interesting. But there is a relationship between someone who kind of needs it probably won't queue for 40 minutes. Someone who really needs it will say, yes, I will queue for 40 minutes. And I guess the hope is that now we have that queue every day. That queue is huge. I'm taking photos of it every day, and we're producing the cost of living report to come out in semester two because I'm just trying to document how bad this problem is on our campus. Because the university does not believe me when I tell them that there's a crisis. They don't understand that students are starving. Students are being kicked out. Students are losing their jobs. They don't believe me. So yes, the queue has an underlying function. It helps students that anyone can turn up, but it also is helping in the long term to make sure that I can give students what they need.
So you say the university doesn't believe you, doesn't believe that the students are facing this increasing cost of living, like the university doesn't support the welfare department?
So interestingly, we share the building with Food Relief. So Food Relief, the frozen meals, is run by and funded by the university and paid staff. They do have some volunteers. But essentially, they run that program kind of in competition to us from the same building. We're quite friendly with them, but it is a problem. For example, they have fridges and freezers, but we have no fridges and freezers. I've asked them to use the fridges and freezers, but they won't let me. I constantly have to deal with complaints about the way we're using the space. And that's the reason we're not open on a Tuesday is because they're running a program there on Tuesday.
That was Yibo Meng talking to Joshua Stagg. The next stop is number 23, Sydney Road. That's where reporter James Warfeld met Matilda Stewart, a Melbourne University student who's taken radical action in the face of rising prices. She's a bin diver who salvages trash to make meals.
Maybe 2 years ago, I was walking home from the 19 tram to West Brunswick, and I heard some rustling in the bushes. It was in an industrial car park vibe, and I was like, this is the end of me. But no, it wasn't some people trying to beat me up or anything. It was some people bin diving from a community collective in Coburg, and they gave me some free Asian noodles, and I was like, I'm really poor. I should go bin diving.
What draws you to bin diving?
I've always enjoyed things that are a little out there. I like going to protests. I like bin diving. I like doing street art, that kind of thing. But in real terms, these days, it's the cost of living, to be honest. And I think that's what draws lots of people our age or anybody, really. Just the cost of food is so expensive.
And is there also an environmental element to it in terms of the food cycle and food waste?
For sure. You'll see food that might have a bit of a bump on it. The supermarket's like, oh, well, we can't sell this. I can take it out of the bin. I'll cut off the mold. I'm not going to get something mushy because then the mold travels more. But if it's something like pumpkin, I can just cut off a decent margin. That's soup for a few days. Reclaiming food that the supermarkets deem as not sellable, so to speak, keeps food out of the landfill. We know how exploitative the supermarket duopoly is of farmers. It's even more sad that the food that they do end up buying from the farmers, quite a fair chunk of it ends up in the organics bin just because it's not, quote unquote, sellable.
And tell me about your average trip to go out bin diving. What's it like? Is it easy to find the food you're looking for? Is it difficult?
It depends, like, where you go, what time it is, that kind of thing. Sometimes I'll just be going home from work and I'll go past Victoria Markets. You can't really get what you want. You just get what is there. You might get some broccoli. Now I've got broccoli in the freezer for my stir fries and stuff. If you go to bakeries, you can have a better idea of what you might be able to get and even get some treats, which is really nice. I love some stale croissants, but it's not really what you want. It's more what is there.
Do you have any exciting or scary bin diving stories?
I was in Torquay with my mum and we went to the different surf and ski outlets. We had some security officers chase us away from some bins, but we did end up getting these really sick leather ski gloves, except they'd been cut down the palm, but we sewed them back together. They were still great gloves and they kept my hands warm, so that was kind of funny.
That was James Warfeld. Our third story takes us to stop number 20, Berkeley Square. Yingyu Liu interviews thrifty shopper Sydney Tang about Cheaper by Miles. A discount store with groceries approaching and sometimes even past the best before date. Yingyu started by asking Sydney why she first started shopping there.
Actually, my partner and I are pescatarians and recently we have become obsessed with this mass-packaged plantry mock chicken burger. So for us, we're constantly on the lookout for cheap sources of meat-free protein because, you know, they tend to be quite expensive in regular markets. So the pack that I found was $5 for 950 grams at CBM or Cheaper by Miles. And like, it was the biggest win in money saving. And I have not found comparable value like that anywhere else so far.
Okay, so as far as I know, this store has many items which have been expired for a long time. So would you mind buying expired items?
Most of the time I would mind with expired food, but my understanding is that Cheaper by Miles have worked out, you know, how long certain products are past their best before for them to be placed on display and sold. So I do feel like I can trust the CBM range a little bit. In addition to that, I'm obviously, you know, proceeding with caution. Every time I'm opening the packet or having a little bit of whatever's inside, I'm going to inspect it carefully, visually, and smell it and all the usual things because it's variable and the guarantee is not there.
So what do you think about the similar shops like Cheaper by Miles and their marketing methods?
Yeah, I'd personally like to see more stores of this nature, or at least wider awareness of the existing stores. And to me, I think there's a nuanced distinction between expiration and best before. And I only learned this recently because my partner told me. But, you know, I think it's something not many people are aware of. And a lot of foods produced these days have so much preservation technology that have gone into them and are often safe, if not ideal for consumption, for some period after the date labeled on them, especially if you, like, store them correctly or refrigerate, which slows down a lot of the microbial activity and degradation. Actually, they're opening a new one in Fitzroy, I heard, so I was very excited about that. I see the role of these sorts of stores in the economy as a social gap closer because they divert edible food from wastage, but they also meet consumers' needs more affordably.
That was Jingyu Liu speaking to Sydney Tang. Today's final story is back at stop number 10, the University of Melbourne. Elliot Rodriguez reports on tram ticket inspectors and the hard-up students eager to avoid hefty fines. He spoke to student Anas Hussein about her experiences.
Exactly at tram 19, I've always seen them all around, and they try to somehow invoke a fear in a lot of people around me, myself in general. I always, whenever I get on tram 19, I always have my key in my hand. It's because I'm always scared that they're always standing at the stations near the universities because they know that students usually don't tap on because it's just one stop difference between free tram zone and our uni station. But I've always seen them stop a lot of Asian people, a lot of people with hijab, doesn't matter like the facial expression, are they scared or nothing? They just stop anyone that they see that is not Australian. Makes me like fear them. Oh my God, I'm gonna get a fine, $300, $200, just because I didn't tap for one stop. It kind of like, yeah, invokes a fear in me, so I know I will be stopped at any time.
How does the increase in the daily MyKey fare and the continuous targeting of students from ticket inspectors add to the cost of living crisis that students are facing?
Last year, the MyKey tickets were a bit lower. They were around, the whole trip would have been around, like, I think $7, but now it's $10. It's increased very much. Every day, you have to pay, like, $10, $5 to just travel to uni and come back. That adds on every other aspect of your life. For example, last time I was trying to look for a little change in my pocket, just like putting my MyKey just to get through to go back home. To add on to the cost of living, it's a lot. Even though it's just $5 every day, but I come to uni every day. So that just adds on like $50 a week. So it adds on, like it does, even if it's a small amount. Even though like I live one stop away, free tram zone, like it's a lot.
Can you tell me about any negative experiences with ticket inspectors?
I think it was the first year, uni. See, I wasn't so used to like, oh, like when am I supposed to tap on, tap off? But I knew that I had to tap on, so I was already tapped on. The ticket inspector stopped me. Unfortunately, I had two MyKeys. One was a different MyKey that I didn't tap on. And then there's another MyKey that I did tap on. So I was trying to look through my bag to like, oh, no, I did tap on. I had class and it was first year. So I had no clue what I was doing. So I was like very stressed. But I think that's where my fear was like brought up.
That was Elliot Rodriguez. A massive thank you to producers James Warfeld, Yibo Meng, Yingyu Liu, and Elliot Rodriguez. The Yarn is from the Centre for Advancing Journalism at the University of Melbourne. It's produced on the land of the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation. Our executive producer is Louisa Lim. I'm Thomas Phillips. See you next week.